Hello and welcome to today's episode of Rainer on Leadership, your online home for leadership lessons and advice for the local church. I'm your host, Jonathan Howe, and as always, I'm joined by Tom Rainer, the president and CEO of Lifeway Christian Resources.
One of the realities of church life is that people come and go. Church members come and go, staff members come and go, and pastors come and go. And thanks to one of our listeners or readers, one of the two, someone said, I really would like to get some help in this area. And we're here to help. And one of the things that we do, particularly on the podcast and on the blog as well, is we listen to our readership and to our listenership. And when they give us some areas where they say, we really need to touch on it, we try to follow up. And this particular question is, I really need guidance on what to do. Now, was this a staff person leaving or was it a pastor leaving?
He's the chairman of the elders, the guy that asked the question, and a youth minister was leaving.
So what are the next steps that we take? Yeah. What do we do? So I appreciate that type of question, and it has guided this entire podcast, and I hope it is helpful.
I appreciate him trusting us enough to be the ones to answer it.
Absolutely. And keep in mind that these particular podcasts, we launch them on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
We try to focus on highly practical areas. Now, the reality of it is all of our podcasts and our blogs or our blog posts focus on practical ministry, but we try to get really focused on the nitty-gritty of practical ministry on these Tuesday podcasts.
So today, the topic is what to do when a pastor or staff member leaves.
Right.
And we've got a few points to cover here. And the first one is to understand that the natural time of grief is needed.
Yeah, the departure of a staff person, the departure of a pastor leaves a void. Some are loved more than others, obviously. Some are admired more than others, obviously. But any time that there's a departure, and I'm not talking about a forced departure.
But to be specific, in this podcast today, we're talking about like whenever somebody takes
just
another job.
Just voluntarily leaves.
Or retires or things like that.
There's this big void, and here's the nature of ministry. The nature of ministry is relationships. And so this is not like someone in a back room that is running a computer and you never see them. They are connected to people. Mm-hmm. There are relationships that are forming. And so the first thing that I would say to not only the person who inquired about this, but to anybody else, is understand that your church, and at least a segment of the church, is going through a time of grief. They're missing that person, and things are not the same as they used to be. Now, let me make a prefatory comment. I happen to see you dialoguing with a commenter either yesterday or day before, a few days ago, on one of the blogs, and it was like, where's prayer in this?
Yeah.
You know, where's the Bible in this? Well, sometimes we make assumptions, and we don't need to make assumptions. We're presuming that all of this is built upon the Word of God, and all of this is built upon a foundation of prayer. So we're presuming that you are praying about what you should do in this, because that's going to be the answer to virtually everything we say. If you're not in prayer and you're not in the Word, it's just another secular vocation. But here we're saying you're building upon the foundation of prayer and the Word. So having said that, understand that a natural time of grief is needed.
Yeah.
Sometimes with let's use the example of a pastor, a long-term pastor, and by long-term I mean 15 years or more, probably retires. Once that pastor leaves, there's going to be a huge void because the identity of the church, yes, it's identified with Christ, but the personality of church in the form of a sinful person, not Christ, but in the form of one of us, is that pastor.
Yeah.
And it's all tied up in that, and the church just does not feel the same anymore. That's probably an example on one extreme when a long-term pastor leaves, but even when a short-termer leaves, staff person or pastor, relationships are there. Understand the grief is natural.
Yeah, and especially in the specific scenario we were talking to the commenter, the guy that asked the question, is with a youth pastor. So you've got youth. I know whenever my wife has left churches in the past, that's been
everybody
a tough
loves Beth.
Exactly.
In fact, we were at a church where Beth used to be.
The were children. Gushing
it was
about
like,
Beth.
Jonathan, good to see you. How's Beth?
Yeah.
How'd the kids? How's Beth? Jonathan, are you liking your work at Lifeway? You want Beth to come back? Send Beth back. Good grace. It just felt like adoration was taking place.
And that's good.
Yeah, that is good.
For her, especially. But there are emotional connections, especially with youth pastors, children's pastors, those kind of things.
Well, just think about the student or children's pastors. The relationships, yeah, are among the student or children's, but with the parents as well. Yeah. So those are voids, and sometimes it's best to space these things out accordingly to allow the time of grief to take place. In fact, if it's been a long-term pastorate, I recommend take a break for a while and then start the search process.
That goes to the next point, is that just to don't rush into the hiring.
Yeah, I don't like putting it this way, but it's still a truism, and some people are offended when you mention it in Christian ministry, but hire slowly, fire quickly.
Yeah.
Make sure you get the right person. If you have the wrong person, deal with it quickly.
Yeah. Most expensive hire you'll ever make
is the wrong hire.
Wrong hire.
Exactly. And so go slowly, but also everybody in the church that is involved, and sometimes that's all the congregation, needs to know what's going on. Don't presume they do. Over-communicate it. We had a previous podcast where we talked about the use of technology. Communicate it through technology. Communicate it through social media. Communicate it through your website. Communicate it through the announcements. It goes on and on. Don't assume that you can communicate too much. Let them know the process, where you are. Let them know the timeline, where you hope to be. And let them know if there's a change in the timeline. I was working with the church just last week, talking to the leadership at the church, and they had given a precise timeline for the hiring of a worship leader. They had the person. This is when we thought he would come. He backed out.
Yep.
And so now they have to go back and tell the church, not necessarily we're starting over, but the timeline has changed. Mm-hmm. Over-communicate with them.
And that just eliminates questions. That eliminates probably a lot of griping as well.
Yeah. They never tell us what's going on.
Yeah. And pastors probably get a lot of that, especially if it's staff. You know, when are we going to have a new youth guy? When are we going to have a new children's minister? And there can be a lot of angst about that if it's not communicated well.
Exactly.
Next point is to evaluate the needs for that position and see if they have changed.
The reality of it is, if you've been in a church for a while, you think that the staff positions that are there are the staff positions that were in Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts, all the way to Revelation.
Especially in larger churches.
And you're thinking, okay, we had a pastor, we had a worship leader and minister of music, we had a student leader, and the list goes on and on, or minister of youth, whatever the nomenclature may be. Ask the question, if we were starting from scratch, which you are, in this particular case, do you need the same position? I was in a church one time. I was serving as pastor, and the church historically, and I'm talking about 30 to 40 years, had always had an associate pastor. The associate pastor filled different roles. Our biggest need at the time was to penetrate the lostness of the community, and I suggested that we get an evangelism pastor. They'd never heard of evangelism pastor. Well, I don't know if I'd ever heard of evangelism pastor.
You made it up.
I knew that we needed someone to focus their time in that area. We happened to find someone that was also gifted in administration, so he became pastor of evangelism and administration.
There you go.
We had never had one of those before, but it was the greatest need at the time instead of just a generic associate pastor. This is an opportunity to ask if there are needs that have changed. Part of it could be, was this person full-time? Can we go part-time?
Yeah.
Was this person part-time? Can we go full-time?
Mm-hmm.
Either way, all of those questions are pertinent right now. Take the opportunity of the vacancy to ask the right questions.
Yeah, Beth, we mentioned her earlier, but she's taken two jobs, especially the one you mentioned in Alabama. The two jobs before she came here were part-time to full-time transitions. She was the first full-time children's minister at those churches.
Wow.
So
no wonder she's revered in those churches.
Yes, she is. The next point is to consider new methods of searching for that pastor.
We've talked about this in previous podcasts, about particularly in the one that we did on technology. There are traditional ways that many churches have of a process when a pastor or a staff person leaves. And many of the processes of these churches has been form a search committee.
Yep.
Now, that's not always the case. Sometimes there's a personnel committee, or sometimes they're elders. I understand that. But whatever the process may be, ask the question, is this the most effective process? And I'm convinced that in most of our churches across North America, our processes are ineffective.
Yeah, because we're using the same processes that we used 40 years ago, and times have changed.
The times have changed. And let's talk about that traditional process. The traditional process, again, exceptions in many churches, form a committee or then advertise for resumes and hope somebody submits a resume that's qualified or someone recommends someone that's qualified.
And today, a lot of times, it's you get inundated with resumes.
Yeah,
but unqualified.
They just are not the right fit. I don't know how many times I've heard from church leaders and search committees and elders, we're getting all these resumes, but we just cannot find the right fit. Bring back in, you know, our sponsor, Vander Blumen Search Group. I know we talk about them a lot, and one of the reasons that I wouldn't have anybody as a sponsor of Rainer on Leadership unless it was someone that I really believe in and I believe that their ministry is trustworthy and valuable. And one of the things that Vander Blumen Search Group does, it matches the candidate with the church. They do other than churches, but they match the two. And again, I think that that is an incredible ministry, an incredible service. That's one alternative. There are others, but that is one alternative that you can use in the search process. Find someone that's qualified to look for these people and match the profile of the church with the profile of the candidate. In any case, consider new methods of search. Don't presume that the way the previous process happened is the way that you should happen. I got to say this. I don't have to. I'm going to say this.
It's your show.
I have anecdotally noticed that the process of search is extending longer and longer. I am now familiar with a few churches where the search process for the pastor has hit 2 years.
Whoa.
I am familiar with a few churches where the process for a worship leader has hit well over a year and extending beyond that. Those are two that come to mind right away in terms of positions. And the reason is not because people are bad or they're unqualified, it's that the process is broken. And this process, and as I mentioned it again, of waiting on resumes, sifting through resumes, is just not necessarily the best process for this to happen. And that's why I'm saying, okay, a professional search group like Vander Blumen is a possibility. Another possibility is to call up and find people you trust and say, here's what I'm looking for. You know my church, and a church leader in another place, a denominational leader. Quite frankly, I get a lot of inquiries about, do you know someone for this particular position? Well, I'm not a professional search firm, but if I happen to know someone, I will make a recommendation. Consider new methods of search. Don't always think that the way you've done it in the past is the way you should do it for this search.
So that kind of ties in with don't always assume that the role needs to be the same. Don't always assume the way you fill the role needs to be the same.
Yeah. Anytime there's change, even if it's not the most well-received change, even if it's a difficult change, that is an opportunity for something new to take place. That is an opportunity for a new process. That's an opportunity for a new system. That's an opportunity to say, is this role the role that we really need? So anytime there's a vacancy, and I'm saying this to the person who asked the question about what do we do when a pastor or staff member leaves, but I'm saying it to all of our listeners. Think about this. Not just can we fill the position, but do we need the position as it has been described in the past, and do we need the process as it has been done in the past?
Speaking of the process, if it's one thing if a staff member leaves. The pastor usually can shape the process. What about if it's the pastor that leads? How do you shape that process if there's that absence of that titular leader?
Well, first of all, you're going to have key leaders in the church otherwise.
So you need buy-in from them.
You need buy-in from informal leaders. You need buy-in from formal leaders. Yeah. Those it may be chairman of the elders. It may be a deacon chairman. Or it may be someone who does not have a title, but every time that person listens, there was an old commercial many years ago called E.F. Hutton, and E.F. Hutton was a broker, and their little tagline was, when E.F. Hutton speaks, people listen. And they would have this one guy, and there'd be all this chatter going on, and then this guy would say, well, E.F. Hutton says, and the whole room would get quiet. Well, there are people in the church like that, that when they speak, when they walk into a room, there's an acknowledgement that they are influencers. You need buy-in from key leaders, both formal and informal. Now, let's change the subject for a minute, if I may do that, Jonathan.
It's your show.
I understand. Let's say that it is a staff person that is left, but the pastor is still there. I cannot emphasize how important it is to get buy-in from the pastor on a new staff person. Now, in some churches, the pastor is key. The pastor says, here is my recommendation.
Yes.
And or in some churches, the pastor even has hiring power. But in many churches, search committees are formed. And one of the big mistakes of many search committees is not to get buy-in from the pastor. Is this someone that you can work with? Is this someone that you can lead? Is this someone that will affect the chemistry of the current staff positively? If a search committee is looking for a staff person and they go around the pastor and say, we have a process, the pastor's not involved, they are literally headed for problems.
Yeah, that's
in the
a
future.
Recipe for disaster.
Exactly. Exactly. So get buy-in from key leaders, and please understand that if you're getting a staff person and you're going around the pastor and the pastor's not intricately involved, you have a disaster in the making.
Well, you wouldn't do that in a secular workplace. I mean, if say you were hiring a new school teacher,
yeah,
the principal would have buy-in on that. They
I would hope so.
Sign off on that.
I would hope that someone who is going to be primarily responsible for the leadership and the authority would have buy-in on that.
If you're at a bank, you wouldn't hire a new lending officer without the president of the bank being okay with it.
Sure, if it's at that level, absolutely.
So why would we do that in the church? That's basically the question.
And we shouldn't.
Yeah, we should.
We should have leadership buy-in.
The final point is that the need for background checks has changed, and they are now absolutely mandatory.
Yeah, boy, I'm trying to get this point across to pastors.
First, can we hit on the history of background checks?
Okay, you well, do
how,
so.
How have background checks been conducted in the past?
Typically, there have been references.
Yeah, just call a few people.
Call the references, and you didn't even call the references of the references, but you can be assured that the references that are on the resume are going to be very favorable toward the candidate.
Hopefully.
So it's usually an affirmation. Now, I know that I've gotten a call more than one occasion or an email more than one occasion where I'm a reference, and I didn't know it. And
did you know the person, though?
I've known the person, but vaguely. And I got to tell you, in this particular example, this person was looking at moving from one church to another, and they said, you've been listed as a reference. And I said, now, tell me his name again. And I said, I think I remember him.
Probably some student, some former student.
It is a former student. Yeah. And I said, but I haven't heard from him in 15 years. I have no idea anything about him. That wasn't very healthy.
No.
My guess is they probably did not get him as pastor because one of his references didn't know who he was or had only vague memory of him. But that is the traditional process in the past, was to go out and look at the references and have someone call, check references.
Yeah.
Then it evolved into check references of the references. And what I mean by that is get a reference to refer to someone else. Can you give us a recommendation of someone else that might be able to speak about this person not listed here?
Yeah.
And so you're getting beyond the hand-picked persons of the candidates. So that's the process of the past. Sometimes it would include a credit check. Credit checks have been around for quite a while. I went into banking many, many years ago, and credit checks were involved then. You don't want to bring in someone who has a lot of credit problems that immediately you know they're going to be having trouble dealing with ministry. I know many mission organizations will not even let you go to the mission field until you deal with your credit issues right away, or at least before you go to the mission field. So a church needs to say, you need to deal with this before you get into a new position.
And what else now?
Well, the one that you and I have...
Well, there's two probably right now, I would guess. There's legal background check.
Yeah, legal background check and credit check are two of the more common. But the one that you and I have been talking about for months, if not a couple of years, has been social media check. I say this with almost a pleading voice to pastors, those serving on church staff, don't do anything stupid in social media.
Well, I would say don't do anything stupid in life, and then especially don't put it on social media.
There you go. That's even a better way of saying it. Once you put it in social media, it is there for life. No, we can scrub that. I guarantee you, the moment you put up something on a tweet, on a Facebook post, or in a blog, people have a screenshot of it, and they're keeping it. Whoa, did you see this one? I'm keeping it forever. So now there are organizations. Now there are services. You don't have to do it with the social media check with an organization, but now there are services that say, we will check what this person has written. We will check how he's interacted or she has interacted with people. We will check all of these things, and if you do a social media check and it comes back that this person does not show up well, then they're not going to look at them favorably. Let me give an example.
Okay.
I got a tweet from a chairman of a pastor search committee, and he told me, He said, I want you to know that because of what you said, and he put it into 140 characters. I know that I'm going to probably expand upon it, but because of what you said, we did a social media check and you saved us from bringing the wrong person. You may have seen that tweet about 6 months ago. So I just reiterate to the candidates, to the people in ministry or anybody, don't do anything stupid in life and don't put it on social media. I reiterate to those who are looking for a pastor or staff member, check social media, because that is a pattern of where their life has been and what they have been doing.
Now, I know what your answer is going to be here, I think, but what if you find something? What do you do then?
Well, you mean what if you find something negative?
Yeah.
You approach the candidate about it.
Okay.
You go to the candidate and you say, we have found this on social media. Tell us about it. I would have hoped the candidate would have told them ahead of time. Not too long ago, I was involved in a hiring with someone that had a criminal background. And
not me, by the way.
No, it was not you, but it is a few years ago. But this person told me ahead of time, this is something that I did when I was a young person. And
you're going to find it.
You're going to find it. I just want to let you know. Did I hire him? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were upfront. So the first question you'd ask that candidate is, why didn't you let us know this? And the second question you ask the candidate is, tell us about it. What happened?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, both of those are necessary. But regardless of the process, you need to make certain that you are doing all of these checks before you bring the person on.
Today's podcast has been brought to you by Vanderblumen Search Group. They're the premier pastor search firm dedicated to helping churches and ministries build great teams. They've helped hundreds of churches just like yours find their church staff and are uniquely geared to help you discern who God is calling to lead your church. Find out more about Vanderblumen Search Group at westaffthechurch.com. That'll do it for today's episode of Rainer on Leadership. Any final closing thoughts, Dr. Rainer?
Just a reminder that this particular podcast originated with a question from a listener or reader, and we do pay attention.
Yeah.
And so,
send him a book, by the way.
Okay, send him a book and let me sign it before it goes out. I assume you're sending him one of my books.
Yes, I think so now.
Now you're
That's
going
the plan
to,
now. No, I'm kidding.
Now you're going to send him one of my books. But keep those questions coming. We'll do our best to answer them either on the blog or on the podcast.
Thanks for joining us today on Rainer on Leadership. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us online at tomrainer.com.